CEO or councillors respectively were actually responsible for. So, having said all of that, his current CEO joined us during that quarter under review. He joined us last year in November. Shortly after, I also joined the council in July last year. But we take full responsibility for everything. And for purpose of completeness, the situation with this current financial year has been revised, and the CEO and his management, those roles and responsibilities that were divested have been revised, and is responsible for them. So the CEO will take us through the non-financial performance report, and the CEO will then take us through the financials and will wrap up the presentation. CEO.
Thank you, Councillor Salah. Chairperson and honorable members, I must just indicate that there's been two revisions in the presentation we're going to make today. We have revised slide 13 in your land that deals with the expenditures, part of the expenditure report, and then we've added a slide at the end, which is about remedies that we implemented to correct the anomalies experienced in quarter three. But just to recap, on our strategic goals and objectives, you would note, honorable members, that we still have five strategic goals which were aligned to the Department of Communications, or the previous Department of Communications, to promote competition, promote digital agenda, promote the efficient use of spectrum resources, protect consumers, and modernize the CASA. I won't dwell on those, but the five key focus areas that we had as the CASA were the cost to communicate, the local loop and bundling phase two, DTT readiness, spectrum licensing, and access to broadband services. In those key focus areas, we're implementing most of them through five programs that we have at the CASA. The cost to communicate program was well underway by Q3, and the decision that was taken by CASA was during that period of time where a regulation on termination rate was made. The local loop and bundling has been through various iterations within the regulator. By December, we had published a note or explanatory note on local loop and bundling. However, subsequently, because of the requirement both by Parliament and the industry, we subsequently decided that because of the publication of broadband policy, we needed to do the regulatory impact assessment. But the regulatory impact assessment on local loop and bundling needed to cover the totality of the local loop, whereas local loop and bundling was focusing on legacy networks of Telkom, like the copper wire, local loop, and the exchanges. We needed in regulatory impact assessment to do the totality of the review on local law, including fiber laws and whatever else. GTT Centec had reported in Parliament by last year that they had 80% coverage. However, GTT has been hamstrung by the issues around the set-top boxes. Even though all the regulations that were necessary to facilitate digital migration had already been put in place, that has still not taken place. And in Q3, that had not happened. Spectrum licensing on high demand 802.6. That has also expanded. You would remember, honorable members, that by last year, there has been an inclusion of another element in digital migration 2 or digital dividend 2 in the 700 band that has been included in that. However, that had also not taken place by Q3. The access to broadband services is related to the broadband value chain that was being done in cooperation with the previous Department of Communication. They had allocated money to ICASA, or actually facilitated the hiring of consultants to help us in the broadband value chain. So those were the five key focus areas that were being dealt with in Q3. Only two of them had any particular movement. Now, in the governance, in the program one, the governance and administration challenges, the major issue, you would remember, honorable members, the CASA has been through a process, or has been trying for the last 5 years, to realign its structure. In that realignment, it actually took longer than expected. We had hired consultants around about 2011 that were for the Adam Smith report that was focusing on changing the structure of ICASA. We literally decided to implement that, and in implementing it, the major issue around the realignment of the structure of ICASA was, you would remember, honorable members, that in 2000, when ICASA was formed through law, the ICASA Act, it was a merger of IDA and SATRA. In that merger, the sum of the two became exactly that, the sum of the two. There was no rationalization in between. So the realignment was supposed to tease that apart and reconfigure ICASA so that it functions appropriately. For instance, you find that ICASA has got, within the regulatory divisions, you find licensing actually in three divisions: the spectrum licensing under engineering and technology, there's licensing under licensing and compliance, and then there's a certain amount of licensing under consumer affairs. The realignment was to put licensing in one division, to put compliance in one division, and then downstream, engineering and technology need to focus heavy consumer affairs and then expand the region. That's essentially what realignment was all about. That's what council tasked me to do when I came on board. And to do the realignment of the structure, you need to reduce your strategy as an organization, and in reviewing strategy, it then informs the structure. That's what we did in December, and that's what resulted in that longer consultation process. The other element to it was the performance management policy, which had to be prioritized. The CASA's culture of performance was not that good. We had three gateways. One was, the gateway one was about clean audits. Gateway two was about individual performance and gateway 3 was about organizational performance. There was no agreement between the CWU as a union and the organization about some of those gateways. And we had to try and realign that also. Those are the challenges of governance and administration. And we also had a situation where we had a depleted, we'll talk about that in the last slide, about remedies that we had to address. We had a depleted human resource department. And as a result of that, we couldn't deal with some of these issues because HR was depleted. In the next program, licensing and compliance, we had a compliance department that didn't have sufficient number of staff to discharge the functions of monitoring and ensuring compliance, as well as handling complaints. The culture of the CAS, I must indicate upfront, is like what we do as a country, and in every junction we put robots. And then we don't realize that in putting robots, we are actually increasing the levels of complexity of our traffic. Whereas in other jurisdictions, if you look at France, for an example, they simply put traffic circles. And everybody knows how to drive in traffic circles. And the nature of our operations is that we don't do that. We try to put ourselves right in the middle of processes. We tend to mediate between the industry that we regulate and ourselves. And in the process, we create that complexity of compliance. Whereas at the end of the day, we should be putting that responsibility of compliance to the operators in the industry, not for us. But we ended up using a huge number of temporary staff. That's one of the things that we had to rectify. We did work on the additional funding, which was submitted to the previous Department of Communication. Unfortunately, there is no way we're going to get additional funding for staff when actually 65% of our budget is actually spent on staff. Of course, the nature of the CASA is that it's supposed to be a knowledge organization. And a knowledge organization is supposed to have staff doing the work that's necessary to regulate the industry. On program 3, the engineering and technology challenges, the challenge was that we had a lot of difficulties in getting consultants on board. It was our processes that were hampering this, which we subsequently addressed, as you'll see in the last slide on remedies that we implemented to address this. But by that time, by 2-3, we were supposed to have done a frequency migration. According to National Frequency Band Plan, we were supposed to have developed the licensing framework for IMT, specifically 2.6 GHz and 800 MHz, which is the digital dividend one. It subsequently happened, but in Q3, that was never achieved at all. The markets and competition, the main regulatory challenges were call termination rate regulations, which were finalized in Q3. And those were done by Q3, even though they subsequently resulted in a court case by Vodacom and MTN. The other element that was also dealt with was the party election broadcast regulations for national elections, which were delayed in a way because of the release of party list candidates that prevented the assignment of time slots on radio and TV stations. Those were the main challenges in 2003. The last program, Consumer Affairs. We have a process for complaints handling at ICASA, which we call the Alternative Dispute Resolution Mechanism, which is supposed to, between an engagement between ourselves and operators, to resolve or to facilitate a speedy resolution of consumer complaints. ICCC is a dinosaur that takes its own time to resolve issues. Hence, we had to create that. But the requirement is that operators must come on board in order to ensure that this mechanism works. And they had to put processes to ensure that the mechanism does work. Some of the operators work faster, some don't. However, the most of these things, you find that it's around, most consumer related complaints are around SIM swapping and fraud that happens and high deals. And most operators do come on board. Out of the 28 complaints that we had around about that time, 25 of them were actually resolved through this mechanism. That's the issue, honorable members, in relation to the performance information report. The CFO will take us through the details of the expenditure during Q3. I'll hand over to the Chief.
Thank you, CEO, Chair, honorable members. I'll be talking to the Q3 expenditure results. As indicated on the slide, I guess one can say that the material variances related to underspending are a direct reflection of the non-achievements on the strategic plan objectives and targets. If one has a look at the total expenditure, we've underachieved in terms of the budget for the quarter or at the end of Q3. Our operational expenditure versus the operational expenditure budget, we've got a variance of 7.5% underspending, predominantly as a result of the restructuring. Council took a decision to not fill vacant positions until the finalization of the restructuring. And then the next line item relates to normal projects. Normal projects are budget allocation that funds the strategic plan. The 72.9% underspending is related to the non-achievements at the end of Q3. And then, the ring-fence budget allocation at the end of Q3 relates predominantly to capital equipment, postal monitoring equipment, broadcast monitoring equipment. There's a material underspending of 54.1% at the end of Q3, but at the end of the financial year, one can say that we had completed the procurement processes that resulted in us being able to contract and have commitments to retain the budget allocations for ring-fenced and for most of the projects funded from the normal projects budget. We've also indicated the forecast allocations. Can we call it a mid-year reprioritization exercise that we conduct at ICASA, where if expenditure or spending rather is not going according to budget, we come up with a plan to reprioritize towards other urgent or critical needs that were not able to be funded from the budget allocation at the beginning of the year. So we've got forecast allocations, as indicated on the slide. We had forecasted to spend a majority of the budget allocations at the end of the year, but unfortunately not 100% of the budget allocations as indicated by the variances in the last column on the slide. The next slide talks to the, or rather gives some indication of the budget allocations per program or per division. Until the end of the 13-14 financial year, we had 5 programs. Support programs were consolidated into governance and administration. And then we had the 4 core programs, being your licensing and compliance, engineering and technology, marketing, competition, and consumer affairs. If one has a look at the slide, what's important to note is that the if one looks at the second column, ring fence projects and normal projects and CAPEX, the 71 million budget allocation amongst the various programs, the actual expenditure against that budget allocation is very dismal. We've got an underspending there of 59.8%. They again is predominantly linked to your normal projects, which are basically funding your strategic plan objectives and also your ring-fenced funding as well. Just to point out that we could not fund normal CAPEX additions like your IT equipment, IT software, etc. at the beginning of the year. Hence, we are not reflecting a budget allocation for CAPEX, IT CAPEX at the beginning of the year. During our reprioritization exercise, we were able to reallocate or redirect surplus funds or underspending towards your necessary or critical IT equipment and software, etc. And then the following slides are basically we're focusing on the 4 core programs. For the first slide is a detailed allocation for the licensing and compliance division. The top part of the slide, or the first columns or table rather, talks to the projects that support the strategic plan and that are funded from the normal project budget allocation. As you can see, year to date, for licensing and compliance, not too bad at the end of Q3, and the projections for spending at the end of the financial year are also indicated. One can say that at the end of the financial year, there was considerable progress towards spending the funds, and to some extent, if there was no cash outflow, there were commitments in place with letters of awards or contracts that had been concluded with the service providers. Just to mention that if one looks at the bottom of that slide, the second table, it talks to ring-fenced funding allocations for postal monitoring equipment and broadcast monitoring equipment. Just to mention that we had challenges sourcing this equipment in the country. Procurement regulations dictate that we need to give our local service providers an opportunity to bid for tender to provide services to ICASA, but unfortunately we were not successful. Hence we had to go on an overseas procurement exercise where we had to source the equipment overseas. We were able to conclude the contract on the broadcast monitoring equipment at the end of March 2013. So during the course of the 13-14 year and by the end of the Q3, we had made a lot of progress towards spending on the capital equipment for the broadcast monitoring equipment. So the equipment had arrived and was being rolled out and implemented. On the procurement of the postal monitoring equipment, serious challenges where we had to cancel the bid because the main bidder was actually subcontracting more than 75% of the bid, so we had to basically source the equipment overseas. But at the end of the financial year, we had basically concluded the contract. Then if one looks at engineering and technology, the division or the department, the projects, the top table on the slide, the normal projects budget allocation is funding the projects indicated on the table, the first table on the slide. As you can see that at the end of Q3, there was considerable progress towards delivering or spending the budget allocation for Q3. Obviously, the forecasted expenditure results are also indicated, and there was considerable progress on that spending at the end of the financial year. And at the bottom half of the slide, it talks to the ring-fence funding budget allocations for specialized spectrum management software and spectrum monitoring system software. We've had challenges on the procurement process with regard to the spectrum management software. We've picked up irregularities in the procurement processes, which would have resulted in irregular expenditure, so we've had to cancel that bid and source the equipment overseas again. Then the spectrum monitoring system, the procurement process had been concluded at the end of the financial year. And then if one looks at markets and competition, in this particular program, we had some challenges. The funding is coming from our normal projects budget allocation. As indicated by the CEO earlier, most of the budget allocation is towards either implementing regulations or revising regulations, etc. Challenges in that regard. And if one looks on the right-hand corner of the slide, we had to reprioritize some of the funds in that division or that were allocated to that division based on the fact that certain regulations could not be revised or implemented, hence the budget would have been sitting idle. So we had to reprioritize and make use of it before the end of the financial year. Then if one looks at the last expenditure slide for consumer affairs, here again, the budget allocation is coming from our baseline allocation, normal project budget allocation. There's some progress at the end of Q3 towards spending. One can say that most of the projects here in this division were in progress, some not finalized at the end of the financial year, hence the non-achievements, but there was some progress towards delivering on those deliverables or targets, hence the spending in this program.
Honorable members and Chairperson, the remedial actions that we did implement as a CASA in order to ensure that what was not done in Q3 is done by financial year end was reprioritization of funds for projects, which was done through monthly and quarterly reporting. There was mid-year reprioritization, and then we had to fast-track procurement requests during the fourth quarter, except one in relation to the spectrum management software. It's the one that we're dealing with now, but by the end of fourth quarter, we had made sure that we had committed funds on the projects that we had. Then we did go further in filling in of critical vacancies. We didn't have a general manager, HR, but we had appointed one by the 1st of January, or she started on the 1st of January. We also, by the 1st of March, had a general manager, legal, and CCC. We had accelerated the organizational realignment. By the end of the financial year, the council had approved the top structure of the organization. What is it by now? Finalizing the totality of the organization. Council did disband the interim structure. You would remember that on November 2012, as Councillor Masalafa indicated, council has taken responsibilities for regulatory divisions from the CEO. But by the fourth quarter, they had handed that back to the CEO to be responsible, to myself, to be responsible for the totality of the administration. And that helped a lot in trying to guide the functioning of the organization better. And we did refine organizational performance. In the totality of performance management, we had improved a lot. We had managed to agree with the union on the way forward. We have by now, for instance, done most of the performance agreements. We had streamlined the refining of targets that they become measurable. They are much more strictly defined. And that has helped a lot in the way the organization started to function. So those remedial actions were the ones that were implemented by the financial year end. And it has made sure that the ICASA performed better. You would remember that in 2012, 2013, the performance of the organization was about 33% of the targets. You will see when we come back and present the annual report that we have improved on that. Not much, but at least in 2013, 2014, we've managed to achieve about 41% performance. We believe that can be accelerated with better functioning of the organization. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, CEO. Chair, we are in your safe hands. Thank you, members. If we want to raise and make comments. So it's straightforward.
Sorry?
No, it's straightforward.
In that order.
You indicate that you have met with the union, for example, etc. Now, something that one doesn't understand, perhaps you'll go on to explain this. We know that in the country, of course, we some continue to say that it's not true, but we know that the unemployment rate is around 40%. I know some will say 27%, 26%. Okay? Now, can you explain this one further? You are saying that equipment is taken from wherever. Is brought into the country from overseas. If you kindly could explain this, are we unable altogether to get anything from South Africa? If you could explain that, because that in some way will be able to assist us to deal with the high levels of unemployment in the country. And further, you have explained this thing of monies, of saying that you have not been able to spend a lot, okay? But you further went on to talk about the non-performance that it is not proper. Obviously, it can only be proper if we have enough members of staff there. You have indicated that it's about 75% that was supposed to be employed but not employed. Obviously, there can be, you know, proper execution of that which has got to be executed. If you can, you could go on and explain this properly. You say that, yes, money is there, we're not spending. But then, there is lack of proper delivery. But money is there. So if you could explain that. But then, kindly emphasize this one. Indicate what people have got to be employed, and you say, yes, there is money, but then you are not going to produce that which has got to be produced here in South Africa. We'll get that from overseas. I think that is a problem, or is a problem, Chairperson. If that could be clarified so that we can take a proper decision.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to ICASA for the presentation. I must say it's quite strange to read this report and to sit here listening to this presentation, because a lot of the functions outlined in the strategic objectives don't really fit in with this department. They seem to fit in with the Department of Telecommunications and Posts. So it's quite strange that this committee is sitting here discussing this, when our colleagues on the other portfolio committee, I believe, should be either dealing with this or at least present here. Because a lot of these strategic objectives, if not all of them, are either wholly concerned with telecommunications and posts or at least partly. And it just seems like this entity really doesn't feel like it fits in with the work that we do. So I'd like to hear the comments from the CEO on that, and perhaps the minister, if she'd like to give her comments on that. On page 6, on organizational realignment, the CEO said that this is a process of teasing apart the merger of SATRA and the IBA, if I heard him correctly. So is he actually suggesting that we are going to go back to a split regulator, one dealing with the broadcaster and the other dealing with the regulation of telecommunications? Because that's what I was hearing from his comments, and I'd like to just get him to elaborate further on why we would need to tease apart this merger. Is he saying that this merger is going to be undone? Given that the department itself is split, is he suggesting that the ICASA will also split along the same lines? Then on page 7, deals with compliance. It is noted that the compliance department doesn't have sufficient number of staff to discharge its functions. I'd like to ask, how many staff do you have to do this currently, and how many do you need, and why is there such a shortfall? And perhaps the minister can respond why, or at least when, the additional funding request that was submitted to her department will be responded to. The CEO also talks about robots and traffic circles. I thought that was quite a stinging criticism of our compliance culture in South Africa, effectively saying that there's too much red tape. So I'd like to hear what the minister's response is to this criticism, that there's too much red tape and too much compliance, and that we need more traffic circles and less robots, as he said. Then on page 8, it says that there was a bid published to engage a consultant to be appointed before the end of March. Is that March 2014 or March 2015? It wasn't quite clear to me which year that was. And if so, was that person appointed? Then, just on the expenditure report, we note that there's a 68 million rand deficit. In other words, there was more money spent than came in. So more money was spent than came in, but you only delivered on 52% of your quarter three deliverables. I think that's quite a damning indictment of the work that you do, I'm afraid. Because, in other words, you're spending more money than you're getting in. But you aren't able to deliver, you're only able to deliver half of your objectives, even though you're spending more money. Is that an acknowledgement that ICASA is really failing in its mandate? Because that looks quite damning to me. Thank you.
Honourable Pandey.
I would like to know the time. I'm on Program 5, the Consumer Affairs Challenges, and I would like to know the time frame that it takes to allocate licenses for radio media, community radio, and then also the President said in his final speech that community media should be assisted, and I would like to know in what way do ICASA support that. As we all know, it's very costly for the licenses, so is there a way that we assist community radios? And then also I want to know, I personally wrote a letter to ICASA to ask questions on the 16th of July. What time frame do you have to answer? How long does it take before you get answers to questions? Thank you.
The first one is on disabilities. Somewhere, I don't remember which slide was it, where certain things were supposed to have been done and nothing was done. I don't remember what was the explanation in that respect. I'm covered on the turnaround time on complaints by the Honourable colleague. And lastly, on people in the organization who are supposed to take responsibility for us as an organization, not to have seen audit. What is it that we are doing as an organization? Surely there are those who are supposed to take responsibility for us not to have seen audit as a department, as an entity. And lastly, it's on regulatory projects, which has now been referred to the CEO. There was a slide which talks to that one. What mechanisms do we put in place to ensure that as we refer this project back to the CEO, we are able to deal with the issues that led to us taking powers in the past to cancel.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is only one. I'm happy with the report. Well done, guys. We have improved from where we left. Remember that we asked some improvements in some units, and I'm very glad with what happened. The only thing that you have done is that you omitted my language. There is no Ndebele language there. So, in case if you don't know that, Tokoza or Tokozani, yeah, ke reale wa ya brain. So, please. Very important, Minister, because here we are talking about communication. I'm afraid that even when they produce other things, then they will forget my language. Yeah, mine today is only about consultants. If we can try to, next time when you come with a yearly report, man, try to at least get stop the usage of consultants. Maybe if you can talk to Minister and DM next to you to assist you to get money to get stuff, fill the post, then maybe it will assist a lot. So please, the usage of consultants is the one that we should worry about now. Thank you very much.
If there are no other questions, we'll give over to ICASA.
So thanks, Chair, and I think we're appropriately
Deputy Minister and the Minister would fill us in. The then Council in November 2012, the way we understand it, took that decision because of their worries around the delivery of the strategic objectives in terms of the regulatory issues, and as well as how the conversation went about in the portfolio committee regarding the extent to which councillors were oversight and get involved in the work of council, and therefore you know, an interim structure was put in place to respond to that. The second issue, where we stand, there is a proclamation that we would report through the Department of Communications, the new department, and I think it stays there. We have been invited to come and account for this protocol committee, and we have arrived. So any other committee of parliament, if it invites us, we will come and we'll share our work with them. The issues of the time frames, I think, with regards to the letters, it's usually 30 days, but things sometimes fall through the cracks, and we just have to follow up on those issues, particularly the letter and the licensing. So I think we'll revert back to you if there is any situation, but I think we should have received an acknowledgement already. So I think it's a matter that we'll have to follow up on that. CEO can take some and the rest.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll briefly just respond to the two questions related to the finance results presented. I believe the first question relates to slide number 12, the summary 2013-14 Q3 results and full year forecast slide. I believe the 68 million that was mentioned as a deficit relates to a column on the slide that's headed deviation from budget. The 68 million is actually a total of the variances or the underspending. If one looks at the, can we call it the year-to-date figures, budget versus actual for Q3, one will note that we've got a 65 million surplus there. The total budgeted revenue, the actual is 300 million. Less the total expenditure of 240 million. So at the end of Q3, the actual bottom line results were a surplus of 65 million. And then we're indicating on that slide, on the right hand side, the forecast figures. We were anticipating a surplus of 9.9 million at the end of the year. Obviously, these are just estimated or projected results at the end of Q3 for the financial year. But I can safely say that in our financial statements at the end of the year, we've got a surplus relating to a small portion of underspending. Then there was another question related to do we purchase all our equipment overseas? Definitely not. We are not allowed to do so in terms of the procurement regulation. We had challenges specifically with regard to the postal monitoring equipment. We went through a bid process locally, I think on two occasions, and then we had no choice but to source the equipment from overseas. And then also on the spectrum management software, yeah, we failed in that regard to source a supplier locally. There are maximum of two suppliers that supply that sort of software in the world. One of them has a subsidiary company locally in South Africa. The other one is based in France. So based on our research and planning, we felt it's better that we restart the procurement process to advertise locally and overseas in that regard. But currently, to date, it's the postal monitoring equipment which we have to source overseas. We did not have a choice here.
Before the CEO, we have just checked on the 16th of July. We haven't received the letter that you have referred to. Probably we can just give you to which yes. Okay. The second issue. Are we reverting back to IB and SATRA? Okay. This is not my turn.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Hlaloganya. What I meant by realignment, organizational realignment, it's not about splitting ICASA. We're not splitting ICASA in the organizational realignment. That's why it's called realignment, is because we are trying to ensure that we don't work in silos within ICASA. You don't find divisions. Let me give a practical example. A licensing officer in ICASA is supposed to deal with broadcasting, telecommunications, and postal licensing. Not find that you have got a licensing officer that focuses on postal, a licensing officer that focuses on broadcasting, or a licensing officer that focuses on telecommunication. It's just inefficient to do that. You need, if licensing is about giving somebody an authority to do something, doesn't matter whether it's postal or telecommunications or broadcasting. That's the type of activity that we're doing. It's not about separating the IBM. So when I was referring to it, is that we simply put the two bodies together and they function separately within ICASA. And that had to be done away with. It's because ICASA is supposed to be a converged regulator. And a converged regulator cannot work in those type of old structures. That's the problem with it. So we're not splitting the regulator. The other issue that I wanted to answer was that on the 1st of March 2014 was the appointment of, was the starting date of the chief legal officer. Would not be 2015. The time frames Councillor Masaloka has already answered. The issue about clean audits in ICASA is first and foremost about properly defining targets. The reason we get sometimes qualification in audits is that, let me give you a practical example. We make a target that we're going to license 5 radio stations. We issued the invitation to apply. And what happened is that it was in the Free State and in Northern Cape. There was no applicant in the Northern Cape. There were 4 applicants in Free State. And 3 of them had adequate information and finances to actually be licensed. But because we had said in the strategic plan, we're going to license 5, then we have improperly defined the target. Because then there was no application, then you don't achieve 1. So you have not achieved the target. You cannot say because you licensed 4 and there was no applicant that there was suddenly an achievement of target. that's part of the problem that happens when we do audits, because we improperly define targets. The mechanisms that have been put in place for regulatory projects . Some of the things happen because you do a project or you define a project and then subsequently you realize that you need to change an approach. Unfortunately, when you do that, let's give you a practical example, the coal termination regulation. You can do it. In 2010, coal termination regulation was not done through cost modeling. Subsequently, in 2014, when we were challenged in court, we had to do cost modeling. That's some of the mechanisms that we learned. It's a problem of interpretation sometimes, interpretation of law. Do you need to do a cost modeling in order to come to a determination rate? Not necessarily. Sometimes it can be negotiated. The previous Department of Communications was trying to help by negotiating the same rate to achieve the same result. It can be done in that way. But suddenly, in this instance, because the estimate was high and the rate was being pushed low, then operators felt it necessary to actually challenge it in court in order to ensure that they don't lose revenue. And it was better for them to actually negotiate in order to not. Some of these mechanisms, we were forced now to actually do a cost model. And that's what has been done. We were rectifying some of these things. When I was talking about the level of complexity, it was not a criticism on the ministry. When I'm talking, it's an approach that a regulator has to do. In some cases, you need to enable. In some cases, you need to regulate. The trick for a regulator is to decide when to regulate and when to enable. It's always that balance. When I was talking about robots and traffic circles, is that we need to enable the industry to operate. But on the other hand, we need to regulate certain things that they don't want to do. A practical example, the industry is obfuscating by doing a lot of promotions, as an example. The promotions, they mislead everybody. You think that after 3 months, you think that it's actually the applicable tariff, only to find it's actually a promotion. And those things, they become such a constraint on end users. On the other hand, why should we put ourselves in the middle as a regulator between an operator that's supposed to comply with the laws of the country? A practical example, industry doesn't want to cooperate on BEE. Why do we have to regulate in order for them to realize that BEE is a necessary issue in South Africa? However, you have to regulate that because they are not complying. But on the other hand, if you look at providing information to end users, operators must do that without the intervention of a regulator. We don't need to intervene as a regulator in order for operators to actually provide information. So it's that balance that I'm talking about. We need to differentiate when we enable, when we actually facilitate. I'm not talking about self-regulation here. I'm talking about, as an example, class licenses. Why should we go through a laborious process in order to give somebody a class license? But they still need to pay fees and all. So some of those things can be done online. Some of those things can be done faster. Some of those things can be done in a way that enables the industry to continue to operate. Those areas where we regulate, it's where we enforce certain things to happen. There's a huge on-net, off-net price differential by operators, an example now. And my colleague here, Andrew Barrens, is from Vodacom, is one of the culprits. They misuse the on-net, off-net. It's some of the things that we learned, but the mechanisms that we put in place is to decide when to regulate and when to enable. The other issue is the ministry that's going to handle that. I don't feel it appropriate for me to handle that issue. The minister will help me. When we got on board, when I came into ICASA, there was actually a strike about bonuses and all. And the reality that confronted me was the fact that there was not a good relationship between the union and management. As a result, the reason I was narrating the issue of ISADRA and IBA is that you ended up at ICASA with a huge support staff and less knowledge staff, let me put it that way, the engineers, the economists, and all. Now, that created a base for the union. However, it couldn't be antagonistic. ICASA is not trying to retrench. We're trying to maintain the staff that is there. What we will have to do, you would remember, honorable members, that there was a skills audit that was asked by Parliament, that the ICASA must go through that. That's what we have to provide a report on to this Parliament. However, in the skills audit that we have done up to now, we know exactly how much staff that is high level we have. However, because of the huge support staff, what we may have to do as an organization is to increase our training budget. Because South Africa cannot afford to retrench people at the cost. We can't afford to do that. What we have to do is to actually retrain people, give them the skills that are necessary for them to carry out the jobs that are required at the cost. That's the first port of call. Of course, natural attrition will happen. When it happens, it happens. There's nothing we can do about that. But we have to make sure that we give people the necessary skills to carry out their jobs. That is why, as an example, we've decided that the licensing officer, as an example, I made that example, must be able to license in telecommunications, must be able to license broadcasters, must be able to license poster or courier businesses, as you name it. You need to bring those skills to the individual so that they are competent to do that. That's what the skills audit is also helping us to identify. But it's the issue about, as Clarinda clarified, the type of equipment that you require to carry out some of the activities is actually quite high-end. And you end up not finding it in South Africa, as you were explaining. It's about equipment. There's only one post office in South Africa. The rest is the courier business. So to monitor, you must get that equipment from outside the country. But the people, the provider, will, one of the conditions is that they will have to train the individuals within ICASA in the utilization of the equipment. So there is that balance. But we have developed a healthy relationship between management and the union, the communication workers union. It's quite healthy. You have individuals that are willing to ensure that the organization functions appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you. You want to make a short follow-up?
Yes, I just want to get some clarity. You say that you are a regulating body. Is that only with regards to radio media, or like now with the shifts in programs in the SABC, do you also are you also acting there as a regulating body, or only because the shifts were not it's not within line with the Broadcasting Act of the SABC? Some of the programs, do you think, take in consideration the majority of speakers are seen a lot of people are negatively affected. So I wondered if you also have a role play there, or is it only with regards to radio media? Thank you.
We do that. SABC would apply for channel authorization, and of course it has a local content obligations. So if there is a situation that arises where there's got to be a deviation, they'll have to get that authority from ICASA. For instance, during the Soccer World Cup, the SABC would say, can't, you know, because the games are played at 7 o'clock and that's the time when there's news, can't we waive the requirements? Local content, probably Muvango or something like that, and it's at the same time when there's going to be, you know, a gameplay. So they would do such applications in advance for authority to deviate from the local content obligations.
There was a question about staff in compliance. There's 20 currently, all inclusive. However, in the realignment, what we realize is that what we need is actually 9 across all, that is ECS, ECNS, broadcasting, and Poster. We need 9 compliance officers present in the street.
I just want to refer to that state comment. Some of those programs were made permanently now on, like the news on SABC3, and these, the majority speakers in the Northern Cape and also North West, they're Afrikaans speaking, and a lot of Afrikaans content will move to SABC3 now permanently, and these people, they really affected badly. So I want to know if, are you aware of that, or was that application being also made with you?
No, I'm not sure exactly about that, but if it has got to do with their obligations, deviating from their obligations, they would have obtained an authorization from ICASA. But if it's just shifting of programs here and there without impacting on the local content obligations, they wouldn't require an authority from us.
Thank you. There are those questions which I think will be answered maybe by the ministry, which I think for once and for all I also know for a change agree with Honorable Davis. Let's see if there's this, you know, some confusion that the strategy goes off of communication belongs to telecoms and Poster. I think this, we would have to once and for all to put this thing to bed, because there is this time and again confusion around whereas we know the process, which is you have alluded to it when you have, I'll be happy if again you explain this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to respond to a few things before I hand over to the Minister. Honorable Davis asked, and specifically so to the officials,
But why are they here instead of them being in telecourse? Really, Honorable Davis? Would you think that it's important that you ask the officials that question as if they get to decide which department they must go to?
On the point of order, Chairperson. It's my understanding that these are not officials of your department, Deputy Minister. So you can't refer to them as officials. They are members of a Chapter 9 institution which is independent from government. So they're not officials, and you don't have to answer for them. And I take exception to what happened earlier, where the minister actually stopped the councillor from answering a question.
That's still in order, Chair?
That is the executive.
He raised an order. He can only raise an order on the matter
that is coming. That is the executive interfering with the independence of a Chapter 9 institution. They're not officials. They're a Chapter 9 institution, and they should be independent.
Thank you, Chairperson. In this country, in government, we've got Chapter 9 institutions and they report through government departments. We've got officials and Boy Scout principals. If you're not happy with that, you get to do what you want to do with. But for now, that's what you are doing. And I repeat, as you said, well, those were your words to say you're asking the officials. They are the officials wherever they are. Nevertheless, Honorable Davis, the President has made a proclamation that ICASA will fall under the Department of Communication. I'm glad about one thing, that as much as you say that amongst their responsibilities, there's also telecoms, but it doesn't mean that there's no communication. Honorable Chair, I want to highlight one thing. I understand that there are those that have this phobia of believing that ICASA is wrongly placed when it's put under the Department of Communications. Many have openly said so, that maybe it's because they want to drive the propaganda as the department. Honorable Chair and members, I want to state one thing, that it is not the first time that ICASA is under a department. My other life, Honorable Davis, as the Deputy Minister of the then Department of Communications, because I was reporting with her, to us, including SABC, that is the National Public Broadcaster, they were both reporting to us. They are indeed a Chapter 9 institution that was established by us, but the fact of the matter is that, like all others, as the Act is very clear. Now, if we're not happy about the reporting channels, let's go and challenge the Act. Let's not come when we're supposed to do the work in terms of the President must be followed and challenge that. The President has proclaimed, and I say, as the Deputy Minister of Department of Communication, we don't see any problem with that because ICASA is there to regulate. As the CEO was explaining their processes internally, they have responsible officials look into whether you post as telecoms or broadcasting. They are there. So in the near future, I would appreciate that you don't put our officials in an awkward position of wanting them to tell where they must belong to. They can't explain that. It is the government that is doing that. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Something?
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on what the Deputy Minister has said, I think I'll refer the Honorable Member to the provisions of Section 192 of the Constitution. That's the Chapter 9 you are referring to. And it precisely specifies what is ICASA's role. Maybe for the sake of the record, can I just quickly read it for you? See, but I'll summarize what you say. National legislation must be established, must establish an independent authority to regulate broadcasting in the public interest and to ensure fairness and the diversity of views broadly representing South African society. That's why ICASA was established in terms of this constitution which the Honorable Member seems to advocate. So, I've specifically said that to say these issues to say ICASA must belong to telecoms, and I think it's with due respect ill-conceived and engineered to undermine the constitution itself as I've read it, and the law for what appears to be an ulterior motive, I think we need to be taken on board. Why should ICASA fall under telecoms? Because the constitution is very clear. And then I think people need to respect the head of state. Because in essence now people are challenging the proclamation, and we cannot allow such anarchy to occur here. Because really, because the president has pronounced himself on this matter, so we cannot allow, unless there's an ulterior motive which we don't know, some of us. So I think we wanted to make this matter clear, because even the constitution is very clear. So there's confusion, we tend to create unnecessary confusion. And unfortunately, some of the members here, including some of the councillors, because on a matter that is very clear, the proclamation is very clear where the administration of ICASA should rest. And as the DM has indicated, all chapter 9 institutions, they've got an allocating department that they are accountable through, which they account through parliament. That's why you even see on the appointment of councillors, the Minister of Communication facilitated the processes. So I think let's clean the matter and let's clear the matter and stop to create further confusion, because this is what the head of state has pronounced in terms of proclamation number 37839. I think I'll urge honorable members to go through the proclamation so that all this confusion moving forward is definitely clear. And then the other issue that I've observed throughout the presentation, yes, the officials have submitted the report. And then I know you are doing oversight as members of parliament. But I think you shouldn't end on criticizing, because also this is an opportunity for you to come with proposals on what needs to be done. You see, the NDP now calls for members of the citizens, members of the public to play their part. So I don't think now the opposition will keep on asking this is not done correctly, and then you're not even coming with something tangible, that's the proposal. You see now, because like I'll indicate moving forward, Chairperson, with regard to the issue of addressing the call termination regulation. I think they've indicated the challenges and the process that they've gone through. I think ICASA just needs to quickly attend to all those issues that have been raised in terms of the court case, because if this is not addressed by October 2014, it means then the regulation becomes invalid, and this will be happening for the first time since 2010. I think moving forward, they just need to quickly address that. And then I need also to indicate that we are still going to consider the annual report moving forward towards the BRR report. I think from October, I'm subject to correction, they will be presenting the fourth quarter report, including the annual report. And then I think when we come to that, I think all these issues that the challenges with regard to the collecting of licensing fees, these are the issues that are going to come clearly, and also the issues that the AG has raised. So I think we also need to give these staff members the courage to say the work is being done. It's an acknowledgement on our part. The work is being done. It's in progress. But also, let's also play our part as members of parliament to also come in with constructive proposals on how best can ICASA perform its functions, rather than to start to undo the proclamation, because in essence it's challenging the head of state, and such can never be allowed.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, members. And I'm sure there are areas which both ICASA and GCIS which will want you to come back on, especially if you take the area of a training program from GCIS, which members were asking here. I'm sure we'll want GCIS back on that. And also ICASA on the progress report on the audit, skills audit, so that we are able to, and also on the last part, which the call termination regulation, so that we, as we move forward, we are able to deal with this, with those issues. Members, I must commend the department and thank you very much, Minister and Deputy, for your attendance in the committee. We would like you always when you are available to be part, and we take